Hello, and welcome to Interracial Marriage with Christina Adams. I'm your host and relationship coach. Today, we're talking with well-known author, Daryl Omar. Daryl is known for his books, The Crown of Nadia, Best Friends, Wealth, Health, and Success, New Girl, Bumai, The Older Woman, and Boyhood. Please find a link in the description to learn more. Today, we get to know the author and subject matter of his books, something you're not going to want to miss.
Please welcome.
Thank you.
Please welcome Daryl Omar Shabazz to the show.
Yeah! Oh my god, I can't believe he's here! Yeah!
Would you mind telling our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you have going on at the moment?
I'm an author of 7 books. I'm an international bestseller. Even though my books really haven't reached the same traction as Grisham or Stephen King, I'm young, so I got a while to get there. But I read about politics, I read about relationships, I read about psychology and psychological issues. So, I don't know, I'm pretty knowledgeable about things, I guess.
And what are some of your books about?
I just released a book actually right after Thanksgiving called For the Crown of Nadia. That book is kind of like all-inclusive. It talks about, I guess you can kind of say it talks about current events, that the main characters, this military soldier, a very well-decorated veteran who sees the issues with spreading mass order everywhere. He also sees the issues with kind of letting things go to ruin and people having no government and having no form of like ethics whatsoever, because he deals with both sides. But there's also like an underlying love polyhedron thing like that. That he just has, like, he has luck with women, but his issue is the other side, like it is for a lot of men, that dating isn't the goal. The goal is marriage. The goal is finding someone who's loyal to you. The goal is finding someone who cares about your soul, cares about your mind, cares about your physical development. And he's just kind of caught up with women who just want what he can offer, but they don't really care about him. So it kind of just tackles everything, I guess, from a masculine perspective, but there's multiple point of views, there's multiple different female point of views, discussing life as a woman as well, discussing what it's like to deal with a guy with sexual addiction, discussing what it's like to be cheated on, what do you do with that, discussing being the other woman. It's a really in-depth book with a lot of things going on. My other books aren't so complex and aren't so involved, I guess you would say. But For the Crown of Nadia is definitely like a wonderful ride for anybody who likes things like Game of Thrones, things like Avatar: The Last Airbender, or House of Cards, or The Black Panther. You know, people that like to think when they read, and they also enjoy being entertained if that's not going on for too long.
So would you say that this is a nonfiction or a fiction book?
It's definitely, I only read fiction.
Okay. And which of the books that you've written do you think would be most appealing to those in an interracial relationship?
I would say the book Best Friends actually focuses heavily upon interracial relationships. It's about a guy, everything that I write also comes in like a different universe. So that might be hard to understand. So when I use these terms, it might be a little confusing, but the book Best Friends is about a kid named Krish Torjun, who's a very philosophical, very likable guy, but he moves to a brand new, basically the equivalent of moving to a brand new continent to go to college. So when he's there, he's dealing constantly with culture shock. He's dealing constantly with people who are raised just so alternatively to how he was raised, but he's made out to kind of be the crazy guy. Those like some benefits of dealing with interracial relationships. The first relationship, there's like a cultural clash, so it doesn't work out. It's called Best Friends because he ends up dating his best friend, Maya Herrick, who's from the country that he's actually living in. But once they find an appreciation for each other's culture, they find an appreciation for the discipline that people get, or the lack of discipline. Sometimes people being free spirits is a cultural incentive rather than it being something that's ridiculed or mocked. And at the end of the day, it's the differences that they have, it's the different culture shit that they bring to the table that makes them feel like the other person is a good partner.
I love that. That's beautiful.
So
I guess I was going to ask what the end of it was, but you kind of talked about how he falls in love with his friend.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of a slow drip to them falling in love. It's like, I guess a lot of romance novels, you kind of automatically assume that they're going to get together. But this kind of story, he's very resistant. Again, I like to write about the masculine perspective as well. And Chris is in a kind of phase, and that's what I'm going to get into later with you when you actually get to the point that you actually want to talk about, that he just kind of wants to be alone. He's not really looking, after his breakup, he's not really looking to be in a relationship. He's not looking to date. But the character Maya has fallen so deeply in love with him that he's kind of hard-pressed not to reciprocate her feelings, you know?
And do you think that a lot of male personas actually go through that stage where they're like, okay, I guess I'll love you because you love me, or do you just think that it's the situations that he was going through that kind of was a catalyst for this?
I don't feel like every man has the same. There's some men that never get to date at all. You know, they never have any sexual, to be graphic or not graphic, they never have any sexual success. So I feel like Chris's situation, it applies to a special group of men. I guess it's something that I definitely went through, that when I was younger, I felt like I had the entire world in my hands and other people agreed with me. But as I got older, and again, I started experiencing relationships, I started dating, I realized that I could have been anybody, you know, like my relationship that I'm in now with my beautiful fiance, we have a wonderful son together. We're hoping to get married soon and just solidify things between us. I've never had a relationship like I currently have before, but it was because I had all those other terrible relationships that kind of got me to that point. I had to go through a period of not dating, a period of solitude, to just kind of get to know myself, to understand, like, why am I attracting these people? why does everything seem so perfect the first month or the first, like, business quarter, like the first couple of, like, months or so? And then it's just these slight arguments that lead to division. I think, like, a certain category of man, even a certain category of woman, can understand what Chris is going through, that you might have people that are attracted to you. They might find something about you that they like, but they're choosing to fall in love with a fiction. They're choosing to fall in love with a fantasy of who they think you are, instead of really embracing the totality of who you are as a person. And a lot of those times what happens is that we fall in love with who we think somebody is, that once they start being themselves, if they have childhood trauma that's unresolved, if they have even adult trauma, like that situation, you just gotta have a bad relationship, that's usually the number one red flag to not date someone, because they have trauma and they have hardship that they're currently dealing with, and you're going to be unfairly and unceremoniously charged with all the damage that this other person has done to them. So I think some people, male or female, can definitely relate, but I'm not sure if everybody, I don't think it's a, Chris's perspective probably wouldn't be for everybody. I think most people can kind of relate to Maya Herrick, the other character, the other POV in the story, because she's more like, honestly, she kind of reminds me more of the masculine personality, having written it, because she's the one in the pursuit. She's the one trying to sell herself to him. She's the one trying to get him to kind of get out of this. He basically wants to be a priest at one point of the story and never date, never have sex, never get married again. And she's like, I can't let that happen to you. So I feel like Maya is a little bit more relatable. I'm not sure if Chris is going to be a person where everyone can just step into it, side his shoes, and just get it, you know? Like, it's going to take a little bit of work and a little bit of reading to really get what Chris is going through. Because I don't think many people understand male's perspective in relationships anymore.
And what do you think that the male perspective is in their relationships now?
I think the male
I'm sorry. I wanted to go back and tell you congratulations on getting engaged, by the way. I didn't have a chance to say that.
Thank you. Thank you. she would say that it should have already happened. So thank you for the congratulations, but it's definitely a lot. The whole marriage thing with us, I'm sorry, I want to hit one point, but it kind of connects to the other thing. You congratulating me has a lot to do with the question you just asked me as well, is that I kind of grew up and people didn't really get married. You know, people would date for 10 years, 15 years. They would have been together for literally their entire like adult life, like maybe 40 years of dating somebody, but they just never got married. And her culture is not, if you guys have been dating for 3 months and you like each other, put a ring on it right now. It's like kind of,
oh, wow. Yeah.
Like, honestly, like we've seen you too many times for you to not have a ring in your finger. And I think.
And what culture does your fiance come from?
She's Jamaican and I'm Adam. So I'm an American descendant of slavery. She's Jamaican.
Okay.
And her stepmother is Guyanese. So it's a very, very strong, very religious, very, I mean, we both come from Christian backgrounds, but my background's a little bit more understanding the human condition, that I think for men, there's a very big earnest on us to be, and we are the leader of the relationship, whether people want to admit it or not. A lot of the times when a relationship fails, it's often due to the apathy of the man. It's also due to the man not knowing how to keep his relationship in order, especially as I speak to a lot of women now looking to get sadly divorced and sadly break up with their partner, or don't know if they want to stay with their partner. It's like there's a lot of pressure on men in relationships, but sometimes the pressure is a little unfair, that a man is judged basically by the smile on his woman's face. If she's happy, if she's confident, if she's dealing with life properly, he's going to be credited for that, hopefully. But if she's sad and she doesn't know how to cope with things and she doesn't feel confident, he oftentimes gets blamed for that. It's never linked to her own childhood trauma. It's never linked to any developmental issues that she's gone through. And this isn't, everyone's dealing with trauma, male or female. Everyone's dealing with pain. Everyone's dealing with hardship. But I feel like men don't get any emotional support. And sometimes when we look for it from our partners, it's not there because we're still supposed to be the monolith. We're not supposed to have emotion. It's cliche, but it's very real. Even dealing with my son now, it's like you're not supposed to have emotions. If you do have emotions, you have a good reason for it. Or you have about 5 minutes to cry and then you have to get over it. And there's no like Chris's character, especially the main character for the Crown of Nadia, it's like they're men dealing with real emotional issues. You know, Chris is someone who's dealing with culture shock. He's dealing with homesickness. He's dealing with feeling completely isolated in a new environment. And when I went to, I'm originally from New Jersey, but I went to school in Ohio. When I made that leap by myself at 17, I instantly fell into depression because there was no one really, everyone went to high school together. People had, they were from the same area. They're from the same, like there's so many like points for these people to relate to on. And I felt like a total alien. And we just don't really have people that check on us and go like, hey, bud, how you feeling? Or like, hey, what are you going through? Or like, hey, you had that out. Like if we act like a jerk or something, there's nothing, like no one goes, oh, did that person offend you? It's just, oh, you shouldn't, it's for men. It's like, oh, you shouldn't have acted that way. It's like, we're always being chastised. We're always being told how to act. We're always being told how not to act. We're constantly being faulted and blamed for things that may or may not be our fault. And oftentimes there's no real support or any real help for women to deal with that with a partner. They just tell you to break up with them. They don't give any guidance on how to deal with a man that has emotions. They don't give any guidance. Not that a man who's broken or has like supreme emotional issues should be dating at all, which is why both men go through periods in the book in which they're by themselves, because they honestly might be toxic or they might be dangerous to date at that time. So I do completely understand it prevents people being abused. There definitely is a lot of danger and a lot of historical danger with men who are overly emotional or are addicted to a drug substance or are alcoholic, abusing their family or beating their family. But a lot of these cases, It honestly is just someone's son who was raised more than likely properly, who has real emotions and real feelings, dealing with someone who does not know how to handle a man's emotions. And that's kind of like to originally answer the question of like, why do men feel that way, or what's the male perspective of relationships? I guess like men kind of walk into the relationship understanding from this point forward, I have to care for myself before I care for her. And sometimes it comes off as selfishness. I would say the majority of the time it comes off as selfishness, but it's the reality. It's like once we have kids, once we get married, the two of you and the emotional states that you're going to be going through, the spiritual distress that you two might be going through, the man is going to, your husband's going to be the one that you're looking for support. I guess to be your anchor in a sort of sense, that's like the program that we're using. And it's a lot. It's a lot to deal with, especially if you had the ability to cope with that in your lifetime. If you spent your childhood and your teenage years and your formative years understanding yourself and understanding how to deal with yourself, then there's no problem. But when you're dating somebody and you have children and you're still dealing with past childhood trauma, you're still dealing with psychological issues, you're still dealing with PTSD. In the case of Morgan Ellis from the book For the Crown of Nadia, I kind of use my books to discuss and solve these emotional issues that men and women go through, because I didn't grow up seeing a lot of resources that I could utilize.
So you think that, you know, kind of the divide in relationships is more based on the sex that you're born into and not so much as the racial backgrounds that are kind of in play as well?
I feel like both are very important, because your culture is really going to decide how you were dealt with. You know, if you're coming from, I don't have any like immediate ideas off my head. I would say from my life experience, sometimes dealing with Eastern cultures, the way that they treat women is a lot different. There's not a lot of sexual dimorphism. There's a lot more mutual understanding. There's more of a group dynamic going on, that while there are different gender roles, there's still a respect for each role that people play. So for some cultures, I think it might be a great benefit. I think the way, depending on the woman as well, depending on the male as well, some women don't want to live by any gender normatives. They don't want to live by any cultural standards or traditions that are going on. So for some people, definitely. I think to speak for myself, I feel like it might have been very toxic for both of us, for me and my spouse, with just kind of like the gender roles that were. Because right now, currently, to be a little bit more transparent with my situation, I'm actually a stay-at-home father, and my fiance's gotten her degree. She's a very intelligent, very ambitious woman, and she loves to work. You know, it's, we don't have a very, but we also, it works for us, and it works perfectly because I have a more nurturing nature. Not to say she's not nice and she's not nurturing. That's not my point whatsoever. But kind of like the book The Giver, where the father is like working in the nurturing center, I'm very good with children. I love working with people. I love dealing with innocent people, especially, and protecting them. And she's just kind of in her own world. She kind of just does her own thing. She helps out a lot when she gets home. But to have her be here 24/7 with her son would probably drive her crazy, where for me, I love it. So I feel like sometime, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I was just going to say that, going back to what you were talking about with the emotions that, you know, that the woman kind of has to rely on the man solely. Would you, I mean, in modern societies, I find myself in my own relationship with my husband is that when I see that he's down, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be his rock, you know, so that I can hold him up, and then he's going to be there for me when I'm feeling down. Do you see that as well in your own relationship?
We're kind of young. We started dating back in high school. I'm 27 now. She just turned 25. She'll be 26 in January. So we're a little younger. We're still figuring out ourselves. So it's, I feel like as time has gone on, yes, we've gotten to that point. But having dealt with someone who was 17, 15 when we first met, and now it's about 10 years later after the fact, it was definitely a developmental thing. It wasn't something that just came naturally. And I don't think it was a fault of her own. I was going to ask, like, if your husband knows how to display that to begin with. Because I wasn't taught how to confide in people. I wasn't really taught how to share my emotions with people. So I don't think it's really a fault of her own. It's been a mutual thing of me being able to be vulnerable, me being able to expose myself and be transparent with her about how I feel, versus just coming off like an a-hole or just coming off angry. Because it goes back to communication 100%. Like, I have to be able to communicate my emotions for someone to be able to comprehend them to begin with. It's not really her fault that she can or cannot understand my emotions, or she can or cannot deal with my emotions. Something that I go through now a lot more, like my dad just asked me about this on around Thanksgiving, a little bit after Thanksgiving, that he came over and visited us, and he noticed that I wasn't feeling well. I didn't say how I felt. Every time he asked me, how do you feel? I say, I'm fine. But it was very obvious that I felt like crap. It was very obvious that I was going through something, that something was bothering me, and no amount of trying to play it off like a masculine alpha was going to hide the fact that his son was obviously dealing with something. But as we spoke about it the following day, I had to tell him, it's like, how can I tell you that I feel something that I don't even understand myself yet? Like, I can't articulate a feeling to you that doesn't make any sense to me myself. So in my personal relationship, it was a lot more of me understanding how I felt about things, me not wanting to just brush things off, as because it does no service. If she does something that bothers me in the relationship, it does her no service for me to pretend it's okay for 2 years. And then 2 years later, I want to bring it up and she's like, well, it was fine this entire time. Why are you just saying something now? So one of the things that we stress in our relationship now that we did not do when we were early 20s, now that we're almost 30, it's a lot easier, is emotional honesty and owning your emotions. When she's angry, I really charge her, like, just accept that you are angry. It's okay that you are frustrated and that you are dealing with something and you're offended by something that I said. You don't have to rope us both into this, because that's when you start fighting. If you can recognize that only one person is, not that people don't both deal with emotions, but one person is genuinely dealing with emotional distress, you don't have to be offended by it. You don't have to blame yourself for it. You don't have to feel guilty for it. And it's better enables us now to support each other, to give each other space, because before we weren't honest about how we felt. We just wanted the other person to stay with us. But now it's come to a point where you're going to be here regardless. We need to figure this out regardless. And we can't just be sitting here pretending like we're not angry. Or if you're feeling loving and you feel the other way, is that you feel loving and you want to express love. You want to speak the other person's love language, but you're not allowing yourself to be open and honest about how you feel, to show affection, to show, to give a kiss, to give a hug, to do something nice for somebody, because you're not sure if we'll be taken properly. So it's something that we've definitely learned, and emotional honesty is definitely how we got there, because it just was not easy for her at all before, because I wouldn't tell her how I felt. I would try to protect her. I thought I was shielding her. But then once things build up and I'm explosive in my temper, or I'm crying, or like I'm dealing with something that could have been solved a week ago, and now it's entirely on us to solve a week later when there's something important to do. It's just, it's a constant development of things. A lot of people think that they're going to find somebody and it's going to be perfect off the bat and everything's just going to work out. In a lot of ways it does. Like, we finish each other's sentences. We think a lot, but with that, if the more that we think alike, the more we can understand that my flaws are probably your flaws too. And it was just, it's something that we had to work on. It was not something that was easy or natural.
Do you have any other tips or tricks that you would like to share with our listeners that may strengthen their
I
interracial
do. It's
relationships?
actually it's something that the original topic that I'm sorry that like I've talked about everything else but this. The original topic that we speak about was
You're
dating
fine.
during COVID, and I've been speaking to her often about this subject because I didn't want to come on and sound kind of silly. But last night specifically, we were talking about it, and it's just the importance. I feel like when people go on dates from my past experience versus my experience now, oftentimes when I went on a date with a woman, it was because I had not seen her for a while. She wasn't coming back to my dorm room or back to my apartment, so we had to go out somewhere to meet up. There was just circumstances set in place where it's attempting to get to know somebody better. It's attempting to spend time with someone that you're not seeing. But with COVID, we are constantly on top of one another and we're in a studio apartment. There's not a lot of space or room. So it's like we're constantly around each other. We're constantly spending time together. We're constantly doing things like eating out DoorDash, cooking for each other, having nice nights to ourselves. So the most important thing for us now that, and once again, we could not apply when we were younger because we didn't have any concept of it, is me time, alone time, respecting the fact that when she gets off of work, the first thing that she wants is not to be bombarded with my issues and my problems about everything that my son did that day. She wants to talk. She wants to express herself. She needs to release everything that's been going on with her in order for her to cope and for her to deal with that, and vice versa. But sometimes something's going to happen at work that has absolutely nothing to do with home. It has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with our son. And she needs time to herself to be healthy, versus just sitting there talking to me about it and just stewing inside negative emotions and just having her, because a lot of people like toxicity. They like when people talk about things that they don't like and things that they hate. And it doesn't do that person any justice or any good. At the end of the day, that person needs to cope. That person needs to overcome their situation. And if they're dealing with what happened with us, is that she was working a former job and she hated it. She absolutely hated where she worked. She loved what she did, but it's just everything about the whole situation. I won't get too much into it because I don't like talking about negativity too much. But we got to have honest conversations, and I had to be really real with her and saying, like, you have to leave this job. And if I need to work and I need to go out there, it's fine. She's like, no. She applied for a new job. I redid her resume. But it was only because we had time to ourselves to meditate on it. It's only because it wasn't just me telling her, or it wasn't just pressure of working for our family. She had the time within herself. She had the time to herself. Hey, take our son for a while. Hey, I need a couple of hours to do interviews, to go out and figure out what she needed for her life instead of just trying to fake the funk to keep it going, Like, I don't want her working a job for a decade that she hates. If you can get out of there in a year, get out of there in 6 months and maintain some friendships, that's great. But we just had to really apply alone time. I'm with my son all day long. From literally, he woke up today about 6 o'clock in the morning, and sometimes he doesn't go to bed until like 11 or 12 o'clock at night. When she gets home, I'm exhausted. And I'm an introvert. I don't like being around people. And it's weird for me, just to give a little bit more transparency into my relationship, is that we went to high school together, but I went to college in Ohio. She went to college in South Jersey. So we were about 700 miles away for the majority of our friendship, our relationship, whatever people want to call it. The majority of that time of talking to each other, courting each other, we're knowing each other. So it's like we went from, I can't wait to spend every waking moment with you, and I can't wait to wake up next to you, to, okay, we can't cuddle tonight because it's too hot. You got to sleep over there, and I'm gonna sleep over here. I still love you, and I still respect you, but we can't. Like, it's true, though. It's like after a certain point, people just want the relationship for the sex, they just want the relationship for the emotional vanity. But it's like you're dealing with a real human being there, and sometimes you can't solve their problems. They need to solve their own issues. So in COVID, since we're on top of each other every single day, since we're constantly dealing with two alternative perspectives that the other person can't really, she can't understand what it's like this is a strange thing to say about a woman in 2020, but she can't understand what it's like spending every single day taking care of a kid. She does not know what it's like. But it's like, I don't know. It's just having time to ourselves has really just saved everything. Because at a certain point, we were living together, we didn't have a kid, and there's just so much tension that didn't need to be tension if you just learn how to just give the person an hour. You know, like, you can sit in silence for 60 minutes without pestering this person or bothering them or getting them to talk to you because you're insecure about how they feel or whatever. You know, it's just, it really saved a lot trusting the other person. Sometimes me time is her going out and hanging out with her cousin. You know, we don't get a lot of weekends together. She gets home kind of late. So sacrificing that time for her to be able to enjoy herself around other people. Me sacrificing that time to be able to enjoy myself by myself without anybody around me is what I enjoy, has really just took things to a brand new level, because we can respect more of the individualism within our union rather than having this gripping fear of what's going to happen if the other person isn't with me. We already understand what the person's going to do if we're not around, and it just empowers us more to allow that person to kind of have that freedom and kind of have that liberty to truly express themselves. We don't really get lost in our differences anymore the way that we used to, because instead of me trying to talk to her about crazy conspiracy theories and politics and psychology and, oh my God, like all these crazy religious things that I believe in, I now have that time to myself to delve into that and to sate that taste without having to even bother her with. And when she wants to watch her television shows that I don't approve of or I don't like, it's a lot easier now to just leave the room and let her enjoy her life because it has nothing to do with me. And that was a hard thing for us to, like, that was a very hard point for us to reach and for us to get to, is that it's beautiful to be able to enjoy a wonderful night together. It's wonderful to go out and be able to lavish each other and live the life that you feel like you deserve, or to go on a wonderful vacation to escape the world. But what we're trying to do now is build a life that we don't need a vacation from, and build a relationship with someone that, if we're going to last the next 50 years, 70 years of our life, we can't do that constantly up underneath each other. We need to be able to give each other space. And maybe that's just our personalities. She's a Capricorn and I'm a Virgo. So we're both very mildly introverted people that need a lot of time by ourselves to recharge the function. I'm sorry, I can be very long-winded, so I apologize for that.
I think that it's very important to, you know, understand what the needs of our partners are and to be able to accommodate that. I know my own husband, we all need some me time. When he comes home from work, our kids love to bombard him with the most random questions in the world. And so when he comes in, he says, "Hi, honey." And he goes out to the shed and spends a few minutes by himself, and then comes back in, and yeah, he's just exactly fine for the rest of the night.
I go to the garage. We don't have a shed, but I go to the garage. I think men more so, it's like, we need that time just for, we need that solitude. I feel like it's kind of what makes us who we are in a way. It's like we need that aloneness at times. It's very therapeutic, you know?
I will say, though, usually he's like, "Hey, come with me." And I'm like, he's like, "Come with me, please."
That's
good. So I usually accompany him out to the shed. And just, you know, to talk about our day and kind of reconnect with ourselves. But then he'll also tinker around in the garage or whatever on the weekends and build things or whatever he wants to do by himself. I think that alone time is very important. Well,
because it's something that she's been kind of asking me to do. Not really like join me in there or whatever, but it would be a lot easier to discuss the things that we have to discuss in that kind of private setting, away from our son, away from our neighbors, that quiet space because it's very easy for like, okay, I don't think this is going to cause an argument. I don't think this is going to, but if it's anything emotional, if it's anything personal, it's more than likely going to lead to some sort of disagreement. So it's better to have that in a peaceful environment. And if that's like your space to talk, if that's like, this is our area to get business done in our relationship, then I think it's a lot easier to manage and like kind of get into that mode of focusing. My son just woke up. And get in that mode of focusing than randomly catching someone off guard with, hey, I had a dream about you last night. We really need to talk about my dream. Because I'm that person. She's not. She's not the person that has dreams about stuff being done. I'm 100% the person that's like, I had a dream about you doing this crazy asinine thing that you would never do in reality, and I'm mad at you now.
Okay, I've actually done this to my husband before, and he still brings it up and laughs at me. So he's like, I cannot be in trouble for something so that real. I did not do.
You were there. You were doing it. What do you mean? I saw you with my own eyes.
So if our listeners would like to learn more about your work, where can they find you? I know you said your son was waking up, so yeah, we can go ahead and...
He's kind of like close early consciousness. He does not like sleeping by himself, but he's learning how to. You can find me. Yeah, I know, it's so adorable. He's almost 2 years old. Aww. 18 months, so he's like 1.5. But you can find me at Novel Eden on Instagram. Novel Eden is also my handle for Facebook. I also run a writers collective called the Multicultural Writers Collective. Just a group of authors, writers, screenwriters, musicians that have gotten together. It's you see a lot of people getting rich and being successful in 2020, but the pathway to get there is a little hard. It's very hard to manage. You can also go to bit.ly, that's bit.ly/DarylOmerBooks if you want to purchase any of my work. My name is DarylOmar, almost didn't spell my name properly, Books. And honestly, that's about it. Novel Eden is just the primary way to find me. It means new garden, basically.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show today. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
You're cathartic. You're cathartic. You as well.
Oh, I love it. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Please share this episode with someone who may benefit from its knowledge, and consider donating to this podcast to ensure the continued education, support, and community by Interracial Marriage with Christina Adams. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and hit subscribe on whatever platform you may be listening to us on. Consider rating us to keep our show on air, and until next week, don't forget to follow the love.